Hello and welcome to Radio Contra, the podcast of American Partisan. I'm NC Scout coming to you live from the G Camp in rural North Carolina, way down in the foothills. This is our first episode, and I am very happy to have you with us. Right off the bat, I'd like to say Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to all the listeners, and we genuinely appreciate having you here along for the ride. This first segment's brought to you by Ammo.com. You don't have enough ammunition for what's coming. Ammo.com is a big supporter of our activities, a big supporter of a lot of other great folks on the right, big supporter of freedom. Go check them out. Hit the link in the sidebar. You'll get $15 off your first order of $200 or more. And I say again, you don't have enough ammo for what's coming. Go support them, show them some love, and help us out in the process. So, all eyes are on Virginia. That's nothing new. If you're listening to this podcast, you've probably already heard about all the goings-on in Virginia. The anti-gun bills, the anti-trainer bills, and even HB 67. Which is going to basically fire law enforcement if they refuse to do their duty. It's an interesting thing. Very interesting times in which we live. But, you know, Virginia is not alone. Georgia's got a bill, SB 281, which is a total gun ban. They've also got HB 435. It's a red flag law. It mirrors the red flag laws that we see in other places, such as New York. Kentucky, Bill Request 354, which bans the possession and sale of assault weapons. And Washington State, which for you folks over in the far western readout region, it's seeking to ban all assault weapons, anything they deem as an assault weapon. And of course, with the obligatory buyback suggestion, and then followed by a hard confiscation. So, you know, you can't say that it's not going to happen here. You can't sit and say, wherever you are in the lower 48, that it's not going to happen. We know that it is. It is going to happen. Dearmament is their goal. They want you disarmed. They want you weak. They want you dependent on their infrastructure. So, a lot's been said about that. And I don't think that we necessarily are going to cover anything in here on this podcast that you haven't already heard. So, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about what you can do about it from a historical perspective. So, I'm going to cover something that I wrote all the way back on December 1st of 2015 on the Brushbeater blog called Echoes of Chechnya. Chechnya is a place that I don't think many Americans can point to on a map. But it is a place of incredible troubles in its past. And it's not only significant because they rose up against the former Russian Empire and the former Soviet Empire, but it's significant to me, and it's always been significant to me. The Caucasus region's been significant to me because I look at it as a pretext for war and a very parallel to the war that's going to go on in the Appalachian region. And maybe in the Rocky region as well, but certainly in the Appalachian region. When you look at the terrain of Chechnya, when you look at the people of Chechnya, the sociology of Chechnya, very, very similar to Appalachian peoples, very clannish, very family in nature. They're organized into tribes known as teeps. If you're on the outside of that, you are not a person. You belong to a teep, and that teep is headed by a patriarch, and you do exactly what they say. You're part of that. So all the tribal stuff that a lot of folks like to talk about, they're living it. Now, I would be remiss to not say that they are, of course, Muslim, and there has been a troubled past of terrorism that's associated with them. That said, however, I'm going to read for you what I wrote all the way back in 2015. The Chechen experience, much like the Spanish Civil War, was and is a preview of warfare to come. The article implanted in the link is 15 years old and yet could have been easily written about Ukraine, Syria, Libya, Iraq, Nigeria, or anywhere else on this planet where Major H. John Poole's fourth generation warfare is being waged. The problem is the fact that we don't seem to learn from the past. The rabid beast is attempting to explain to us how he should be treated, and yet we seem to be saving that last bullet for ourselves. The troubles in the Caucasus were very much a testing bed on many dimensions. First and foremost, it must be understood that two things were happening concurrent to each other. That a proxy war was continuing to be waged against the Russians by way of the Saudis and others, including the United States. And that future jihadis were learning that their war could not only be waged in a world-leading nation, but learning how to do it with brutal effect. Beslan School Massacre would be a good one. The new generation, much more concerned with exploiting or exporting global jihad than the Afghans a decade before, learned how not to just fight a superior combined arms force, but set up a cadre for replication abroad. That is a very, very important statement, folks. They learned how to fight the combined arms army of the Russians. Everything that happened in Chechnya will indeed happen again. Study Beslan and then compare with Mumbai, then Paris, and all the subsequent attacks that will occur. It was very much a testing bed, and what we learned from the Chechen experience would define what became known as Islamic terror for the rest of the 21st century up until the present. This is not the focus of the article. Rather, it serves to give a certain perspective, removing the veiled bias, a very justified veil of bias, towards anything jihadist. Many lessons can be gleaned to the benefit of the forces of good, our side, free for. What they did, right and wrong, can serve as a great teacher to prevent the mistakes of the past and make our road to victory just a little bit easier. So why is this important? There's two notes that need to be gathered from careful study. First, use their hard lessons as a primer for yourself. And second, learn to use their patterns against them. And when I say their patterns, I mean the combined arms use of a standing army. Chechnya, in its genesis, was a semi-autonomous Islamic region, repressed first by the Tsars, then by the Marxists, with close to 100% of their military-age males, also known as MAMs, to you guys that have got infantry and soft experience. They were conscripted into the Soviet armed forces. Post-Soviet collapse, most defected, with the anticipation of creating a breakaway state. They tried, at least. Although Islamic in name, much of their Central European cousins, or much like their Central European cousins, the religion was more a label of cultural identity than a rigidly followed dogma, and this would later on create a great rift. To their asset, the early guerrilla forces largely had previous military discipline, and many had recent combat experience in Afghanistan and the disaster that was the Soviet-Afghan War. Does this sound familiar? It absolutely should. They knew how their former employers were going to fight, and they knew exactly how to fight against them. They understood light infantry warfare, both its advantages and its drawbacks, and were more effective than the poorly equipped and fragmented former Soviet forces, primarily made up of conscripts and former criminals. In the beginning, at least, they had the right idea. Soon, however, after the first few victories, including the legendary defense of Grozny, where they destroyed an entire armored division in less than 3 days, a rift developed between the nationalists, who were native to Chechnya, and the rising numbers of volunteer jihadists coming from abroad, places like Jordan, places like Saudi Arabia. Muslims were coming in from all over, infused with a hobby-based fatalistic desires that only Sunni Islam can infuse. Led by a guy named Ibn al-Khattab, the presence of outsiders alienated the majority of the natives. The jihadis were overtaking the nationalists, and the war was hijacked to foment a larger jihad. In doing so, it caused a rift between the Chechen locals and the jihadis, pushing the Chechens towards cooperation with the Russian Federation and isolating the more radical of the hometown heroes. A guy named Akil Collins, interesting fella, he unfortunately has passed on, graphically illustrated this in his book, My Jihad, and it's a book that I think every potential guerrilla should read. It gives a glimpse of exactly where a lot of this mindset originated, as well as a great perspective on a lot of other things. Akil Collins lost his leg over there, stepped on a Russian landmine that was emplaced by a Spetsnaz unit that had ambushed them. Gives a excellent and visceral account of the very real pain and suffering that goes on in a guerrilla hospital. So, moving on. Thus, Beslan and the Dubrovka Theater. Snipers in Iraq and Afghanistan faced off with a few of those. Exported IED and V-bed makers. Improvised explosive devices and vehicle-borne IEDs. And not only the means of building them, but also the tactics behind their use. ISIS, or Daesh, whichever name you prefer. All products of the roots founded in Chechnya, including a Georgian ethnic Chechen named Omar al-Shashani, who quickly became the military commander of ISIS. Big dude, big old red beard, chest rig, look like you could be my cousin. You gotta remember, Islam in particular, not to get off on a tangent, but Islam is not a race. Islam's a religion. So their war is ongoing. It's not going to stop. ISIS is in its current manifestation and a culmination of several missteps. Whether on purpose or not, it's up to the reader to decide, or you, the listener, to decide, not for us to debate. But the war has indeed spilled over into Europe, as well as here at home. And they might be somebody else's proxy, but make no mistake, they are also very much their own animal. So we might as well learn a thing or two before going toe-to-toe with something we don't understand. Ditto for asymmetric warfare against an occupying force. And so while with that last paragraph kind of dated myself, again, it was wrote back in 2015, there's a lot of important lessons to learn about asymmetric warfare against an occupying force. So some of the critical lessons from the two conflicts in Chechnya throughout the 90s. First, Chechens know their enemy right down to their likely roots. They had all that mapped out. Russian army did set a pattern. They did not like to leave their vehicles. And that did not change from the Berlin Wall era onwards. Second, utilizing the human terrain advantage, Chechens baited the superior Russians into brute force tactics and thereby alienating the population they wished to subdue. One of the things that the Chechens were masters at was using civilians. And we might say that, you know, human shields and whatnot are very unethical. And that might be true. But I submit to you this. War is incredibly brutal, folks. Civil war is anything but. You do what you got to do to survive. Right? When the Soviets or the Russian Nationalist Army would go in, they knew that they would announce themselves by an artillery barrage. if they were able to exploit the killing of civilians, unfortunately, that would galvanize the population against the Russian incursion. Third, Chechens reacted to change far greater than the Russian army. One of the big advantages to a guerrilla army is that they can constantly reinvent themselves on the fly. A standard army, especially a conventional army, is very, very rigid as far as doctrine goes. They're not going to be able to do that. They also exploited several of the weaknesses of the Russian army. First, faster flow of information. Chechens were able to pass that along to one another very, very quickly using unconventional communications means. Second, superior understanding of communications methods. One of the best techniques that the Chechens used was simply equipping everyone with a VHF handheld radio. That's ought to sound real familiar for folks who've been to the RTO course that I teach. They passed so much traffic over the air that the Russian signals intelligence teams really couldn't get a lot of usable information. All right. Finally, better understanding of tactical terrain analysis. The Chechens were fighting on their home turf. They knew. All right. They knew where and when to set in ambushes. They knew where they could be pursued and where they couldn't. The Russians did not understand Chechen culture. And we can apply this probably best of all of the things that I've written here back in 2015. We can apply this best to the left and right divide here in America. The left absolutely does not understand and has zero respect for right-wing culture, conservative American culture. They look at us as backwards. They look at us as subhuman. They look at us as culturally and socially inferior to they. And that hubris is a great detriment to them. So getting back to the Russians, the social barriers were there, and they made no attempt to contact local leaders. There was very little respect for Chechens as a people. And the Russians had no understanding of the local dialect, which led to serious communications and signals intelligence failures. Meaning, they talked in local slang. I mean, and the elephant in the room is, listen to my accent. I can talk to everybody where I live because this is where I'm from. I grew up here. I know our local dialect. And if I need to talk in code to a group of good old boys who 2 weeks ago were deer hunters and today are my guerrillas and part of my G-Force, I absolutely can. And you ain't gonna know what we're saying. Ill-discipline among the Russian army caused many well-publicized war crimes. You have to have a means of exploiting those war crimes. You have to always have a camera. You have to always have the ability to take video. Local media control by the Chechens was critical in influencing the populace. Media, media, media. Media is very important. You know, a lot of folks on the right, we like to complain about the media. We like to say, you know, it's controlled by the left. It's, you know, kind of pointless. Well, create your own. That's what we've done here. Create your own. During the First Chechen War, Russian army units were badly fragmented and undersupplied. We could say the same for the potential occupying forces in Virginia, in the Appalachian region, and elsewhere, should this thing kick off. All right? Chechens had superior means of communications. As I stated earlier, Chechens exploited large seams and gaps in Russian capability. Hence why several who know harp on communications, including myself. You have to have the ability to communicate. You have to have the ability to share information, rapidly share intelligence at the tactical level, as well as the strategic level over a region. Chechens, through the superior methods of communications intelligence and understanding of the Russian army methods, because they were the vets, they knew how the Russians were going to fight, often confused the forces through a bunch of erroneous traffic. They would send all kinds of stuff that would simply waste the time of the enemy. Chechens knew each other's voices over the radio. They used local slang and dialect. Already covered that. You need to be able to talk like everyone else around you. You need to be able to understand how to blend in with the folks in your operating environment. And you need to be part and parcel of them on their level. Because if you're not, you're ostracized from that community and you're going to look like a troublemaker. And they're going to eventually push you out. Chechens equipped women and children with radios to be used as spotters. These were boarded to a central relay network that changed position regularly. The radios were commercial off-the-shelf sets bought from outside the region. Every guerrilla movement has to have outside help from somewhere. Now, one of the big advantages that we have nowadays is that we've got Baofeng UV-5Rs. Things are cheap. $25. You can equip a lot of folks with those and still not be out a lot of money. And are they the best radios in the world? Heck no. Absolutely not. By nobody's stretch of the imagination. But I will tell you this. I've had the same pair that I bought way back in 2013. I've beat the tar out of them. We've used them in a lot of classes. And even had one gentleman drop one in the mud last January. And then stepped on it when he went to pick it up. It was fully submerged in the mud, pulled it out. I never even cleaned it off. Things still working. So, you know, they're more rugged than I think a lot of folks give them credit for. And finally, had they had the ability, many former Chechen guerrillas who survived the conflict said that they would have equipped everyone with a radio if they had the ability to do so. And on our end, we can absolutely do that. The trick is getting them to be able to communicate effectively. So, summing things up, all of these factors, at least initially, led to a series of great successes. Until it was hijacked by outside influences, it served as a model of how an insurgency can work. It failed only after the radical elements alienated the native population and overstayed their welcome. This caused a great rift, one to which Russian President Vladimir Putin in his first term was able to exploit. He knew that he needed to modernize the army. He looked at the embarrassment that was the first Chechen War. And he knew that he could exploit the fracture that was developing between the native populace of Chechnya and the jihadists. And that was exactly what he did, along with forming a much more effective light infantry model that utilized patrol bases. And it was one that we would later replicate. General Petraeus would write a dissertation about, and we would later replicate in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, moving forward just a little bit, I rounded it out with this statement. Common sense also states to what end all of this will be used. There's not much that you can do about current conditions. And so on that end, it's important to lose the Walter Mitty notions and start studying and training for what worked. It's going to be quite different from what you may know, and it's certainly no Hollywood affair for all the Benny Martin wannabes. The Russian army burned, thermobaric bombed, gassed, and raped their way across the region. There were no safe spaces or regard for anyone or anything. The Chechens were a very hard-boiled people, and still are, born of the Caucasus Mountains and not unlike many growing up in the poverty of the Appalachians and foothills here. This is something that youthful suburban dwellers have no understanding of. It's a really important statement, and one that I get chills when I reread because of the emotion that I had behind that when I wrote it. You have to understand that where we are in history, as far as the fate of empires, the collapse, the coming collapse, the decline of the United States on the world stage. Because make no mistake about it, we are absolutely a nation in decline. And if we look at Western civilization as an extension of the Roman Empire, and I contend that it is, we're in decline. And there's going to be other empires that are going to rise, China being one, being the primary one right now. We got a lot on our plate, and it may very well be that we have to fight a standing army. A lot of folks get super concerned about the left-right divide in America. I look at the left as nothing more than Quislings. They don't love this nation. They don't love you and I. They don't see this nation as being anything other than an unfair, oppressive state that's been guilty of war crimes over and over again, that its borders shouldn't exist, that we shouldn't exist, that the right is a thing to be killed, buried, and forgotten about in history, that we're a relic of the past. In Marx's own words, you know, the nationalists are an extension of the bourgeois. That came from Karl Marx. So you've got to understand that these folks are the Quislings. Just like with William Ayers inviting in all the world's armies to come into the United States for the crimes that apparently we've perpetuated on the rest of the world in his twisted view. It's very important to recognize that. And they're going to bring in standing armies. Let's talk real quick about a couple other site sponsors. Primary Arms. Primary Arms, maker of some excellent quality optics at a low cost. If you are looking for a low power variable, I've got one on hand that I've wrote a review about. They're 1-8x24. I'm a big fan of it, but in particular, I'm a huge fan of their ACSS reticle, the Advanced Combat Sighting System. I've taught guys to use it in the DMR portion, or designated marksman's rifle portion of my scout course I teach. Had one gentleman that came to class from Texas, didn't bring a rifle, didn't want to travel with it, came out from Texas, used my SPR with that 1-8 on top, was making first round hits out to 500 very, very easily using 77 grain Sierra Match King. You know, for the money, there's a lot worse that you could do. I think that Primary Arms, great company. Click on the link in the sidebar. Palmetto State Arms. If you need a rifle and you need an all-in-one quality package right off the get-go, I've got a couple of their rifles on hand right now that I've been using in class. One is a 14.5-inch barreled model. Refloated. I've topped it with my tried and true TA-01 ACOG. Absolutely love that rifle. It's beautiful. I also have a 10.5-inch AR pistol that I've been currently using in the carbine course that I taught a few months ago, and I've used in other classes since then, as well as my own training. I lent it out to a gentleman whose rifle went down on the range. He's a Vietnam vet. Super squared away guy, Marine infantryman, used this thing, and I purposefully made sure that it was going to be put through the ringer. And I've run it pretty hard since then. I've got nothing but good things to say about it. I've yet to have a failure with it. And I think that's a testament to the build quality of both weapons, for sure. But this AR pistol, 10.5-inch barrel, super light, great for home defense, and right around the $500 mark, I think that honestly, you can't go wrong. And I've got it topped with the Primary Arms One Power Cyclops optic. I'm sitting here looking at it. Big fan of that as well. Big fan of that. So click the links in the sidebar. Let them know, you know, they're supporters of American Partisan, and we support them. So I'd like to say thanks for being here. Thanks for listening on this first episode. There's definitely a bit of a learning curve to this podcasting stuff, but it is a new means by which I plan on delivering content to you, the readers. And know this, you are the resistance against the left-wing tyranny. Thanks for being here, and God bless.